Hello, it's Dana, and this is the Night Terrors Podcast. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us yet again for this end of the week episode. Today we're presenting two stories. The first is a retelling of a classic story, Little Red Riding Hood, narrated by Lady Nopingham. Grandma's House is written by Alex Hicks. Enjoy.
"Hurry, before it gets too dark," her mother warned. The candles danced weakly, the source of their movement, an open window in the kitchen. Red packed the cupcakes and thermos of soup into her bag. It was but a 15-minute walk to Grandma's house. She would be okay. The candle cast oblong shadows on the wall as the mother and daughter packed all the goodies to be delivered to her grandma. "If you get lost or scared, phone me. I'll come and pick you up," Mother told her, with a touch of fear in her voice. Red's little trips to her grandmother's house always made her feel quite uneasy. Growing up herself, she had heard countless stories of the menace in the woods that supposedly preyed on children. But they were just that, stories. It was getting dark, clouds rolling through the sky and covering the setting sun. This would not be too much of an inconvenience for Red, as her mobile phone was equipped with a built-in flashlight. Gone were the days of children wandering blindly around in the dark. Now, she had a phone that enabled her location to be shown to her mother, a flashlight, as well as the local police station on speed dial. All things considered, Mother felt a bit more at ease. Packed and ready, Mother gave Red a kiss on the cheek, coupled with a tight hug and the parting words of, "Be safe, honey. Stay on the path and call me when you get there. I love you." Hood on and bag on back, Red walked out the door, calling back her love and affection to her mother. Her mother had told her the stories many times, and they often played over in her head as she walked alone. In every bush, she saw it. Every corner she walked around, she expected the menace to be waiting. She could hear its footsteps keeping pace with her as she walked. She knew it wasn't really there, but the thoughts were scary all the same. She pulled her red hood, a gift from her sweet old grandma, higher up over her head and continued her brisk walk. Red extracted the wonder of the century from her pocket and pushed the buttons that instructed the device to illuminate her path. It wasn't very dark just yet, but the fairly bright light was comforting. She glanced over her shoulder, having felt the sensation of someone walking in tandem with her. All that accompanied her was her shadow. Breathing a sigh of relief, she set her eyes back upon the path. A blur shot across her path, a good few meters ahead of her. Unsure of what was in the dark, Red began to run. The phone light bounced as she ran, causing shadows to dance all around her. Maybe it was a dog, she thought. Or a raccoon? She didn't know what she saw, but she knew it moved quickly. She wasn't far from Grandma's house now. Maybe she should call Mother, she thought in a panic. Reasoning took over her, and she figured calling her would mean she would have to stop. She certainly was not going to stop with whatever it was behind her. Red could feel her face getting hot. As she ran, the tears began to stream down her face. What if it's the menace? She thought to herself. This caused her to sob heavily, snot and tears merging as one on her face. She pawed at her eyes, trying to wipe the tears while running as fast as she could. The blur was even more blurry with tears in her eyes. It came at her fast. Red had no time to react. The menace was real. Her screams pierced the treetops. Her phone fell to the ground as she was knocked over, still partially blind from the tears. She looked up in the darkness at what stood before her. It appeared to be a wolf, although somewhat human. It was covered in hair, and the snarls it emitted shook Red to her core. It circled around the vulnerable child, snapping at her ankles, the pale light glimmering on the sleek hair protruding from the creature's body. Red closed her eyes and covered her head. She screamed as loud as she could. Who was to hear a young girl all alone in the woods? The snarling stopped. Red didn't notice them as her sobs drowned out all other sound. She lifted her head slowly, unsure if it was a trick to expose herself. She saw a torchlight bouncing towards her, her grandma's worried cries ringing out in the night. "Red! Red, baby, I'm coming! I'm coming, sweetheart!" Red had never been so happy to see her grandma. "Grandma," Red stuttered. "It's real. The menace is real. It chased me and attacked me," Red let out with another heavy sob. "Honey, you tripped and fell on the path. I could just about make you out from my porch. You bolted towards me. I thought you could see me. The next thing I knew, you went head over heels on the floor." Red shook her head and tried to argue. Grandma cradled her head and soothed her. "Let's get you inside and put something on this scrape on your knee." Phone forgotten, Grandma and Red walked slowly inside, where it was warm and smelled like cookies and love. Red set the basket down on the kitchen table and sat down heavily on the chair. Her knee was bleeding slightly and she winced in pain. "Just one second, honey," Grandma told her. "Let me get you something to help with that." Red sat, clutching at her knee, tears still rolling gently down her cheek. She immediately began to feel better. Her grandma's kitchen rekindled fond memories of baking and good cooking. She loved coming to Grandma's house. Grandma returned, first aid kit in hand. Knee bandaged and cookie in hand, Red felt whole again. Grandma pinched her cheeks and smiled. "Oh my! My, oh my, aren't those cheeks chubby?" she exclaimed. "You're so cute, I could just eat you." They both laughed and hugged each other. Grandma stood up before saying, "Red, dear, it's been so nice having you over. There's someone I want to introduce you to." The kitchen door was opened, and Red felt her heart sink. It walked in, upright, face twisted in a snarl, saliva spewing. It was a man, but also a wolf. The teeth. Oh, God. Red could see them clearly. Its eyes were cold and dead. It was a nightmare personified. "Here's my little pet, honey," Grandma said. "He's been dying to eat you."
And for our final story of today, we follow a down-in-the-dumps young man and his curiosity that's drawing him to the abandoned house just through the window. Today's second story is presented and published by Dark Owl Publishing, written by Gregory L. Norris. It's called Dead Houses, Dark Spirits. Enjoy. On a blustery October day just after sundown, a young man with a name he could barely remember walked up the hill to the house where he rented a room and saw a light burning in the upstairs windows of the old New Englander next door. A light where none should be, as the place had sat vacant for years, according to local lore. At first, he thought it was an illusion, a trick of the storm, car lights reflecting off window glass. Only there was no traffic on Maple Street. Lightning glinting in those upper attic panes. But there was no lightning, only rain. And when Shannon lifted his head, beyond the downpour was that light, glowing in an attic room. He rented a bedroom on the second floor from a humorless older man who occupied the first with his dog and sometimes a girlfriend. Two other lost souls shared the upstairs and its lone bathroom. They all smoked. Neighbors might have complained about the owner operating an illegal flop house, but there were no neighbors, except for a vacant lot on one side and the old New Englander on the other. Empty for years, as the legend went. Empty since the killings that took place there before Shannon was born. Waterlogged, Shannon pounded up the staircase, ignoring the mutt's ferocious barks as he always tried to, his bladder complaining of its fullness following the long walk after work. It would have been so much easier, and less of a biohazard, to use the vacant lot to relieve himself. None of them ever cleaned the upstairs bathroom. In the hallway, which reeked of ashes, he passed the younger of his two roommates as he came out of the bathroom. They exchanged tips of their chins, that universal greeting between males. Before Darren or Daryl or whatever his name was vanished into the corner room, Shannon cleared his throat. Hey, did you see next door?
See what?
A light on. Someone's over there. The other lost young man shrugged and continued on his way, closing his bedroom door behind him. He'd hung a sheet to cover the window on that side of the house, a big bath towel over the one that faced the street. The bath towel didn't cover the entire pane, leaving about 6 inches of a peekaboo. The sheet was navy and kept out the sun and the strange, creeping sensation Shannon often suffered that he was being watched. Shannon unhooked his backpack, set it down, and reached for the light switch. The overhead was only a bare bulb, its old-fashioned glass shade long gone from the room like the missing closet door and all the covers from the electrical sockets. He caught himself, crossed the dark room and reached for the corner of the sheet. Peering out, he faced the old New Englander and that attic room, aglow some 50 feet away on the other side of the downpour. A shiver teased the fine hairs at the nape of his neck. Shannon fought the chill, but it tumbled, blurring the room around him. In its wake, his surroundings refocused, and the light that shouldn't be there still was. He squinted in an attempt to glean any of the attic room's details. The rain made it impossible to see much more than the outlines, angles. The overgrown trees and hedges around the house were gray giants, the house itself melting into the rain. By the time Shannon lowered the makeshift curtain, his eyes stung from not blinking and the temperature in his rented hovel had dropped to a frigid level. He hastened to his bed, a single mattress on the floor, and got under the covers. Teeth chattering, he pulled the blanket, which smelled of stale cigarettes and staler sweat, over his head and stayed there, ignoring the icy slither suggesting that while he was staring into the other house, someone over there had been looking back at him. He worked part-time bagging groceries, though part-time was misleading. They scheduled him just enough that he was on his feet for 30 hours a week, but not enough to qualify for benefits, and only long enough that he was barely able to afford this lousy place and to eat. On top of that, he walked to work regardless of the weather. The result was that instead of 23, Shannon was feeling more like his grandfather's age. His muscles ached, so did his bones. Worse, the part of him he sometimes questioned the existence of, his soul. He fiddled with his phone, lit another coffin nail, and gagged on the miserable taste, left with the truth that he no longer smoked for pleasure, as the big lie went. But now, only out of habit, because he was addicted.
The storm's ferocity had lessened, he realized, aiming his ear at the window. He pulled back the blanket. His work clothes, still on, had attained an awkward, crumpled fit and felt like layers of dead skin hanging off his limbs. Shannon inhaled, winced at the sour taste of his smoke, and moved back to the window that faced the long, abandoned house. He nudged the sheet curtain aside, only to dart back out of sight. The cigarette spilled from his lips. He cursed, his voice barely louder than a whisper, and danced over the dropped cancer stick, crushing it out. There was somebody in that other window, looking across the short distance, directly at him. Breathing suddenly ceased being automatic. Shannon willed his lungs to expand. Choking down a noxious swallow, he gazed back, right as the figure moved out of the window and the light in the attic room switched off.
You know that house? The one where all those people got carved up?
Big spooky house up on Maple. The ones with the monkeys.
Monkeys?
Yeah. They were doing some kind of medical research up there. Real illegal stuff. When they found the bodies, the monkeys were carved up too. Rhesus pieces, they called it. That was the big joke for years. Ugh. Just like the candy, but spelled like the monkeys. And you know they never found all the bodies, right?
Shannon listened, the cigarette clutched between pointer and thumb, mostly unsmoked. Jared Kincaid, who worked the deli counter, dragged deeply on his, taking it almost down to the filter before dropping it in the gooseneck ashtray in what passed for the store's designated smoking area.
Don't you live up there?
Huh? Shannon asked.
Near the old monkey house.
Not answering, Shannon deposited this mostly wasted cigarette in the ashtray. The storm was over, but in its wake, the graying afternoon was an early preview of autumn's short days and long nights. He went through the motions, bagged groceries, and aged while the world turned in its orbit. 2 hours later, he clocked out and walked the distance back through the dark to a place that wasn't exactly home. An earthy, green smell filled his breaths on the hike up Maple Street, past the vacant lot, and toward the flophouse where the detritus of his life was stored. Shannon cast a look past his sad existence and toward the place Kincaid called the Monkey House. The old New Englander swam into view and pulled farther away from the flophouse as he neared. And again, the light in the attic room was lit. His heart galloped. Though soaked in clammy sweat, Shannon's insides ignited in an upsurge of miserable warmth. The unwanted caresses of unidentified eyes slithered over his flesh. He was being watched. He hurried up the pitted driveway, inserted his key in the lock, and entered through the kitchen door. From there, he raced up the dark staircase at the back of the house and didn't stop until he was in his room. Then, Shannon stalked over to the window that faced the old New Englander. He peered out at the lit attic room. With the rain gone, the view was clearer. He made out walls and part of a floor, but nothing else beyond a pair of thin, straight shadow lines running across both visible sections. They could have been cast from the window frames, he at first thought, only to reason that explanation impossible. The lone street lamp on Maple Street was located across the vacant lot.
Someone's over there, Shannon thought.
He recalled Kincaid's words about body parts, not all of them recovered in lurid medical experiments, and the cold surged back to embrace him. Then, Shannon shook his head and uttered a swear under his breath. What happened over there was from before his time. He had greater concerns than lit rooms and legends. His stomach was as empty as that house, and he needed a shower. Food and to wash off, sure. Only when the tightness in his neck roused him into moving, and he looked down at his phone, 2 hours had elapsed. He would go over there, yes, knock on the door and see who answered, simple as that. Or call the police, report what he saw. Only, what he saw was nothing when he rehearsed it in his mind. On his day off, Shannon paced the small, oblong footage that had become his world and, at least 100 times that day, peered out the window at the monkey house. Go over there, his inner voice urged, but then it recanted. No, don't. You don't ever want to set foot in that house. And then, right as the sun set, he forgot his name. Forgot the small dreams and large ones that sustained him. Forgot all his heartaches and hopes, and only thought of the light in the old house that appeared after dusk. A light where none should be. In the dream, a man outside the window was calling to him, using the name he'd forgotten, in a voice so sweet, Shannon confused it with others. His grandfather, his pediatrician, and Mr. Vogel, his third grade teacher who wore mismatched socks and was kind to him during multiplication tables, which Shannon had trouble grasping. 36, the voice from outside his window sang. To which Shannon responded, 6 times 6. Come on out, my pet, the voice said. Stop hiding from me and visit. Yes, come on over. He was still in his miserable bed, the mattress on the floor, flat on his back, and craned his neck toward the window that faced the monkey house. Movement stirred in the tiny gap of space left nudged aside by the sheet curtain in the last of those 100 glances. Someone was out there, though Shannon couldn't see who, and it made no sense because outside that window was a drop of 30 feet to the lawn. Go away, he managed through lips that felt like concrete. The specter outside the window drew back. Very well. After that, he heard the wind as it gossiped around the house, its disembodied moan waking him enough that he remembered his name. Remembered that he hated the taste of coffee and had once liked ice hockey. And that they hadn't found all the body parts, all the pieces, the Reese's pieces. The sheet curtain slipped, and he saw what was outside the window. Gigantic, gelatinous, a horror of sallow-colored energy and crenulated hide. The thing had dropped its disguise as being only an old New Englander, and, leaning over, slipped through the cracks and molecules and atoms of the same world in the house where Shannon lived. He smelled its dank, sweet fetor, felt its sticky touch as it lifted him off the bed screaming, his voice muffled by its jellyfish mass. When the obscenity pulled back, it took him with it. Through his cheeks, Shannon heard the croaking sound of its ancient joints, and how they sounded like joists and beams as lines and angles were restored, along with an illusion of rooms. It released him. He jumped up, gagging on the too sweet smell inside his lungs. He was in a room, but not his own. The room was lit, though he could make out no light source. Just the long shadows across the floor and walls cast by cage bars, and the view through attic windows across a distance of 50 feet into another window, deprived of its curtain, at an empty, single mattress on the floor and bunched blankets. A dream, surely. Shannon ordered himself to wake up. That failed. He was still in the cage. And then, the creaking of a door sounded. One slowly inching open.
Thank you for listening. All stories are produced with a Creative Commons license or with written permission from the author. These stories are not meant to be reproduced in audio, written, or any other form of media. If you haven't yet, go and subscribe and review at nightterrorspodcast.com or wherever you find your podcast. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and through our email, which is listed in the show notes. Thank you.